Blog Talk Radio.
Nana, nana, hey, hey, goodbye. It is Monday, April 27th, 2015, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. This is the Hockey Guys Podcast. Yours truly, Hunter Crowther. My co-host, Chris Shannon, will be here. He's just running home late. As I've said before, we have lives. And he will be here when he's here. But right now, it's just me. Our guest for, which is now episode 41 of the Hockey Guys Podcast today, is Justin Bourne. Justin used to play professional hockey at the ECHL, AHL, professional ranks, played college hockey. Right now, he blogs about hockey for The Score. Great mobile app. You should download the mobile app, get on it. Justin's going to come on today, talk about his career, talk about the NHL postseason. Talk about his New York Islanders. Speaking of the Isles, Game 7 tonight, folks. New York and Washington. A lot of hype going into tonight's game. I said before that this series would go to 7 games. It's held true. I thought going into the postseason, this was the series that would be the most even. Capitals coming off arguably one of their best regular seasons, even better than when they won the President's Trophy a few years ago. Alexander Ovechkin having the bounce back year, Barry Trotz coming in and turning this Washington Capitals team into the team that everyone thought they'd be, at least in the last decade. Meanwhile, the New York Islanders, after several abysmal years, have finally broken out. Some good goaltending by Yaroslav Halak. Key additions in the offseason as well. Nick Leddy, Boychuk. Garth Snow did something right. And obviously John Tavares, who right now, I think you can make the argument, is in the conversation amongst the players in the league. And joining us on the line right now, the man who played in the professional ranks, played college hockey in Alaska, and now currently blogs about hockey for The Score, it's Justin Bourne. Justin, how are you doing today, man?
Good, good. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Chris, are you on the line as well?
I am, my friend, I am.
Awesome. So, Chris, Justin, Chris, the introductions. Justin, I'll get started off right now. Hi. I'll get it started with my first question. Now, you grew up in D.C. and had a chance to play in the CHL. I read an article where you talked about how you could have played for the Kelowna Rockets, but you decided to play your college hockey at the University of Alaska. Just talk about, to the listeners, why did you decide to play college hockey instead of the junior ranks, and did you ever consider the different paths to trying to get to the National Hockey League?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a matter of doing what's best for yourself, and at some point you have to be honest with where you are in your career, and there's a lot of people who will blow smoke, you know, to get you to do what they want, but you have to take an honest assessment, and for me, that year I would have been, I believe, 18 years old. And as an 18-year-old rookie in, you know, going into the CHL as a guy who would probably barely make the club, you know, that's not a real positive outlook for your long-term plans. And then sort of, you know, let's say you play till you're 20, and it's difficult to make a team when you're 20 unless you're, you know, real good. So I just figured, you know, it'd be best just to get an education and take sort of the safe route. And for myself, I'm, you know, at the time, I was a skinny kid. God, I miss those days. when I was a skinny kid, I needed more time to develop, and university also gave me the extra 4 years of development before I got thrown into the pros, so it just made sense for me in a lot of levels.
Now, the university hockey, it's very different to the professional hockey, it seems like, on TV, and just the players' shape, and they're older, I know that. But do you think university hockey is more intense than the CHL and those leagues around, or what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, no, I do. And it's not a knock on the CHL by any means. It's that in college hockey, you play 32 games, and you spend the entire week building up to your weekend game. So you're game planning for a team like it's a playoff game, and you play a few games, they matter that much more, and you're sort of pent up from all week's practice. It's a big build up, and you know you're rarely coming off a 3-3 or anything like that. You know you've had your rest, everyone's raring to go, and the pace is just it's crazy out of the gate. So. Like I said, not a knock on the CHL, but I definitely think college hockey is a pace on a nightly basis that the CHL can't keep up with.
Now, Justin, sticking with college hockey, I've always been a big voice for CIS hockey in Canada. I always feel like the CIS, which is filled with many former CHLers, it's one of the most underrated leagues in the world. Compare like the NCAA experience to a junior hockey experience, which – at least in the CHL, it feels almost like it's become professionalized, and it feels like you go to the game, and it's almost like you're going to a pro game. But talk about, like, the atmosphere with the band and student sections and what college hockey really is like for some Canadians who might not get it from that perspective.
Yeah. Man, it's really cool. That's I think that's a cool thing for more people to know. When I went to Alaska, we played in, you know, University of Minnesota, Golden Gophers, North Dakota, Denver, Colorado College, you know, we were at some of the, you know, Wisconsin. We were playing the biggest schools there. And Wisconsin, the Kohl Center, it holds like 15,000 people. I mean, these are big buildings. And you go to North Dakota, they're holding 12 or 13. Minnesota's holding 10 or 11. And like you said, they've got the band playing when you get out there on the ice, you know, playing the horns. There's, you know, coordinated chants and students that are just, it's pure mayhem. So, you know, these students look forward to Friday and Saturday night too, because there's only, you know, 16 home weekends a year, you know, in general. Sorry, less than that, probably 8 home weekends a year. So, you know, they make the most of it. It's a really cool experience, and I definitely recommend anyone given the chance to take the college route to do it.
Justin, quickly before Chris steps in, what was your major in college?
Psychology, which really applies to nothing that I do in my life now.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I just figured I couldn't get through 4 years studying something I wasn't interested in. Psychology does interest me, so that was the premise behind that.
Well, in the recent years, I mean, it looks like college hockey is gaining much more popularity. You know, it used to be CHL, and that's the way, like, those leagues around there, that's the way you want to go for the best way to make NHL. But, you know, like, we're going to have a star in Jack Eichel coming out of the college rankings, and, I mean, it's really starting to gain a pace. Do you regret your decision at all, or were you very happy with your time at the University of Alaska?
No, I have no regrets about it. Like I said, for my sort of long-term development as a hockey player, it just made so much more sense for me. You know, I think it's unfortunate that you sort of have to make that call at such a young age. You know, I remember we were, you know, 17, 18 years old. Actually, now that I think about it, it was my 17-year-old year. Trying to make that decision, you know, okay, well, the CHL is sort of the best route to the pros. There's a ton of scouts, and you play a lot of games, and you're playing against the best. But I also want to go, you know, I'm not sure how my development is going to go, so I want to give myself more time. And it's tough to make that decision at that age. But for me, I have zero regrets looking back at it. I did what was best for me.
Moving on to your professional career, you were an ECHL All-Star. You really had 2 years in the minors, and then you had, a broken jaw, which ended your career. Just talk about those 2 years in the minors. Is it like the cliche ride the bus from town to town and play in barns? What type of experience was that like, especially for people who may not know much about the ECHL and the stories that come out of those leagues?
Yeah, things have changed significantly. You know, I remember my mom being like, "Are you sure you want to, you know, give it a try?" You know, she's thinking of the federal league at a Slapshot or something like that. But it, I mean, honestly, it's nothing like that. Depending on where you play, if you're on the East Coast, you're on buses and all that. But I played in Salt Lake City. Our division consisted of Las Vegas, you know, three teams in California, you know, Stockton, Fresno, wherever else the heck it was, Bakersfield, Victoria, BC. You know, some absolutely beautiful cities, and we flew everywhere. I can't think of anywhere in the West Coast. Once or twice we drove to, I believe, Vegas or, you know, Phoenix was in the division too. So, it was not such a bad lifestyle. And frankly, you know, they pay for all your expenses. Anything you get cash is sort of gravy. You're getting per diem on the road. Like, you're not getting ahead, but these kids are, it's not the Federal League. It's a good opportunity to develop. And I think the league has come a long way over the past few years. And the reputation it has is a lot bleaker than it really is.
So what's the difference between ECHL and AHL hockey? I mean, is it a different pace? Is it more physical?
Yeah, it's all skating. They say the jump is bigger between the ECHL and the AHL than the AHL and the NHL. The skating at the AHL level and NHL is very comparable. Speed-wise, the game is very comparable. The NHL players are perfectly positioned. You'll find a lot of people who say it's an easier game to play because you can trust where your teammates are going to be. You know, the ECHL and AHL, it's a little bit more, the lower you go, the more it's, you know, like a gym class chasing a tennis ball and people out of position, and it's a little bit more haphazard. So I would say the ECHL to the NHL is where, or the AHL, is where the true skill difference is. It's just pure speed. You know, if you can't, you can be a very talented player with the puck at the ECHL level, but you just won't get those opportunities at the AHL level. I remember playing in Hartford with Bridgeport, and it was the one time, literally the one time in my career, I was like, I can't hang at this level. They had a bunch of sort of quad A players. There was P.A. Peronto, I believe, what's his name, Alexander, Andre Giroux, some other Giroux, you know, a bunch of these very talented players, who, you know, they're excellent. I just couldn't hang speed-wise, and that, that's a major difference and a frightening thing to think when you're in the middle of a game.
In 2007, you attended New York Islanders training camp. What kind of experience is that like? What's the how-to for dummies on NHL training camp? And just take me through the process, going through exhibition games, going through workouts. What's it like?
It's cool. I mean, it was really neat. I actually had the opportunity to go back the next year, but I just wanted to sort of explore my opportunities somewhere else. I didn't see myself moving up. But my first crack at it there was a neat experience. I went to rookie camp in the summer, and that year was Kyle Opozo was a rookie, and I think they had Rhett Rakshani and Matt Martin was there and a whole bunch of those guys now. And it was really cool. Tambellini, Nielsen, now that I think about it. But, you know, you go through the rigmarole. They basically just want to, you know, everyone to shake hands and make sure you're not a slob in the summer, go through the fitness testing. And then when you come back for the main camp, it's an eye-opener because, you know, you're sitting there and it's Bill Guerin. At the time, it was Mike Comrie and, you know, holding Brian Berard, a bunch of those guys. So I think the best thing to do is keep your mouth shut. You know, you basically don't want to look like the overconfident rookie unless you're one heck of a player. So you need to be careful about how much you're talking about yourself and generally just put your head down and go to work. And I think you got to speak for yourself with your play, and it's cool. You know, and it's also a neat eye-opener to be like, I remember doing the fitness testing with the Islanders, and one of the drills was kind of stupid. You kneeled there and held the medicine ball at your chest and threw it as far as you could from a stationary position. And Bill Guerin got up there, got on his knees, picked up the ball, and dropped it, like, 1 inch, and was like, there, you know? Like, what are they going to do, cut Bill Guerin? He's got a multi-year contract. He's the captain. Like, what are we doing here? This is stupid for him. So, you know, I'm there giving it my all at some of these things. And if you're an established player, training camp is obviously less important, so it's pretty hilarious to see.
Who do you think was the best player you played without? I mean, if it was in the camp or in the minors, was there one designated player that you knew was going to be amazing and just thrived in the NHL?
I don't know, man. It's funny because I never played with anyone overly exceptional. You know, I had Glenn Cross and Beagle on my team in college. I played in the American League. I played online with Opozo and, got some in Opozo and Tambellini at times and even some Franz Nielsen time. And those guys were all great, but I played college hockey against, you know, Jonathan Toews, Zach Parise, Thomas Vanek. You know, it basically, if you go through and look at the players who played in the WCHA from 03 to 07, it is like an all-star team beyond belief. So I think playing against those guys was a big eye-opener. And what was cool then is I could hang with those guys. That was fine. I was a top-line player on a team in Alaska, and I could play against Toews and all that. The difference is Toews at that age is 18, and I'm 23. So, you know, it's not like I felt blown away by those guys at that level. It was just a matter of they were so young and still as good or better. So I've got a lot of appreciation for the guys they played against in college.
Now, following your career, you started getting into writing, and you wrote some pieces for USA Today and the Hockey News and now the Score. What were your first steps into writing like? Did you get into it by accident? Was it more of a therapy post-career? How did you get into it, Justin?
When I got my face shattered, so just, I was playing in the ECHL. I got a slap shot to the jaw, and it was mangled, broke right down the middle. I got a 10 screw plate and an X plate in the chin. I was taped together pretty good. So I had about 2 months on the couch until I could get the wires off. And you can't exercise when you can't open your mouth, you know. Like, if you think you have to puke, you just die. If you puke, you die. So they basically tell you to do nothing, and that's a bleak time. You're hopped up on painkillers watching your 33rd episode of Entourage in a row and trying to kill some time. I was sending emails back and forth with my uncle, who used to be a sports writer, and he was like, this is good stuff, you know, you should start a blog. So just to kill time, I started a blog, and before the wires came off, I was contributing to the Hockey News. That was, you know, maybe 6 weeks after I started. And Chris Botta gave me my first real chance writing for Islanders Point Blank. And then from the Hockey News, that's a pretty good resume addition, as well as being a, you know, someone who had actually played. It was fairly easy to get freelance work. And once you pile up enough of that, you know, your name gets out there. And it's so at the end of that summer, my wife had finished her master's degree, and we were going to move somewhere and sort of figure out what we were going to do after that. So she got a cool offer in Phoenix, and I was going to go play in the ECHL for the Phoenix Roadrunners and just contemplate my next move. And I moved to Phoenix, and the Roadrunners folded. So we'd already moved there. She'd accepted a job, and the writing career had started to take off. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go all in on this. And my lovely wife gave me the opportunity to try. She gave me basically a hockey season to see if I could make it work. And, I was making $115 a week, to start it out. So it was a pretty dry winter. But all that time writing for all those outlets, and by the summer, I had expanded it to a full-time opportunity or two. So that's how I ended up where I'm at.
It's a great story. I mean, you're a true hockey player playing through all these leagues, and now you're a writer and one of the best out there. So let's move on to the playoffs. Amazing playoffs series going on right now. So excited for the Islanders in Washington. What's your theory on that game? What do you think we'll see, a physical game like it has been, and who do you think will come out as the winner?
Well, I do think we'll see a physical game. My kind of thinking is you really lay the body early in the series, kind of hoping it pays off down the road. And I think the Capitals are under the impression the Islanders are going to hit everything that moves. I don't think the Islanders need to run around banging everything in sight tonight. I think they've set the tone pretty good, the Capitals' D-men. They know they have to rush, and I would like to see more minutes for the more skilled guys, run John Tavares into the ground if you got it. But my biggest concern is just the Isles' D-core right now is so decimated with injuries, and that's not a huge deal at home when you get last change and you can make sure Boychuk and Letty are out there against the Ovechkin line. But tonight they're not going to get last change, which means Ovechkin is going to see some shifts against, like, Straighten Hickey and, Donovan. I'm a little concerned about some of the matchups. So I really think there's a lot of pressure on Ovechkin tonight. If he plays well, I think the Capitals win. I think if he no-shows, it could be anyone's game.
Justin, what have your general thoughts of the Islanders been over the year? They seem like what I'd call like everyone's NHL equivalent to Team Sweden, where everyone's like, oh, yeah, I like that team. I could like the Islanders this year. And the additions of like Grabowski and Kuhlman, not to mention, like you mentioned, Letty and Boychuk. Like, this team's really been something special this year, and Halak's played good goaltending, and obviously John Tavares is one of the elite players of the NHL. Like, what do you think of these Islanders that for so long have struggled and now seem like one of the hottest teams in hockey?
Well, I think it's fairly evident that a lot of people are willing to jump on the Islanders bandwagon because the Islanders haven't beat anyone for 20 years. So, it's like there's no one with this like lingering hatred of, the Blackhawks keep beating us, so to hell with those guys. Or, we can't beat the Bruins or Kings, so I hate them. Like, no, the Islanders haven't upset anyone for two decades. So now that the Islanders are good, there's a lot of people being like, hey, that's a pretty likable group. I have no reason to dislike them. So it has been trying times, and I am not one of those people who's like, get away, bandwagon jumpers. Like, I'm like, pile on, guys. Let's do this. I'm excited to have people rooting for the Islanders because we haven't seen a lot of that over the last, 20 years or so.
What do you think of Jack Capuano and what he's done this year? I mean, he's been through the thick and thin with this team, and I've always liked him as a coach, and finally he's getting the team that can do well on the ice. Do you think he's done well as a coach with Islanders?
I do. I don't think Cappy is like, you know, Mike Babcock savvy with X's and O's, and you know, but I think one thing he does well is if he has talent on his roster, the team's probably going to be okay because he lets talent be talent, you know. There's a lot of coaches out there that make an effort to shape what they have into their mold, right? That's John Tortorella. Like, no, the Sedins, they're going to block shots. It's like, well, that's just stupid. That's just a really bad idea. So he'll never do that. He'll let the guys be who they are, and I think that allows players to develop well, you know, when they play to their own strengths and they know what they, you know, how they play best. So I think Cappy's done a pretty good job of just letting the Isles be the Isles, and as their talent grows, I think they'll have a better chance every year, and he doesn't stand in the way. So I think he's done a good job.
It's the Hockey Guys podcast with Hunter Crowther and Chris Shannon, joined by a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, Justin Bourne. Justin, talk about that for a second. What does that enable you to do? Do you vote for NHL awards, and did you cast a ballot for this spring?
It's a really cool, something I'm quite proud of in my career, being a member of that. And I did cast a ballot. This is my third year voting for awards. And in the past, I've written sort of a, you know, a transparent guide to my ballot. This year, the PHWA is sort of trying to keep a little of the mystery in it before everything's unveiled. So I'm not officially allowed to say who I voted for in any real capacity, but it's been great. It allows you to get credentials and have some contacts and vote, and it's like I said, it's something I'm quite proud of.
So the Islanders have surprised us in many years, and they have a lot of great talent, but they have probably the most fun fourth line to watch. I mean, that fourth line in the Coliseum, it's like they just mesh well together. It's crazy how the fans just flock over this fourth line whenever they're on the ice, and all they do is hit. And it's not like they're getting out of position when they're hitting. Sometimes they do, but they're forcing. And you can see in the players on the Washington Capitals that they are scared, and they give up a lot of turnovers. And that is probably one of the best fourth lines out there. And I know we're all talking about speed, and the NHL is turning into a very speedy game, but I really do think that if you have a fourth line like that, a physical fourth line is probably better than a fast fourth line sometimes, I think.
Yeah, the best thing is, like, you know, those guys can play hockey. You know, they're not traipsing out, you know, a bunch of John Scotts that are just ogres trying to run people over. You know, Cal Clutterbuck gets so many hits. Like you said, he's not out of position because he's such a good skater. He's able to get, you know, get his body on the guy and get back in position. And I agree. I mean, they've just been a tremendous fourth line. And you almost use fourth line because it's like, oh, they're the grinders. But, you know, Capuano uses them in big situations. They were out there at the end of the game in game six. They're out there to open periods. You know, this Capuano loves using those guys. And I think one of the, you know, the best things you can say about them is they're consistent. You know, a lot of times you roll out your goal scores and you're not sure what you're going to get. You're not sure if they're going to get chances, but hits are available every game. And these guys don't pass them up. You can count them to do their job. And if you're the other team, every time you see them go out there, you kind of roll in your eyes like, oh, you know, these idiots again. I'm going to get pounded every time I touch the puck. And there's something disheartening about that. You'd rather move it than just get smoked every time. And so sometimes they're rushing decisions. And you're right. I think they changed the tone of the game, and particularly at home. They've been awesome for the Isles.
Bourne, a few more questions, and then we'll let you go. And thank you for coming on the show today. We do appreciate it. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about your father, Bob Bourne, who, when I texted my dad today saying you were going to be on the show, he said Bob Bourne was one of the fastest skaters he ever saw. Your father won 4 cups. Talk about that, though. Like, I guess you were only 5 or 6 years old when your dad retired from the NHL, but what were your memories of his playing career and his coaching career as well?
You know, I kind of did my research as I got older and really got into hockey and, you know, throw a bunch of old tapes in the VHS player and watch dad play. You know, I don't have a ton of memories of him as a player. He spent his last 2 years with sort of bad knees in Los Angeles, and I start to remember around there. You know, I was about the age, you know, I remember being around the rink and all that, but definitely I remember most of his playing days from sort of going back and watching a lot of it. you know, I was an okay skater, but everyone I talked to was like, man, your dad was the fastest player of that decade or whatever. It's like, oh, come on, Dad. Like, you couldn't have passed that down, like, at least a little bit? So I'm, he obviously was, you know, 6'4" and could skate like the wind. I think he could have played in the NHL in any generation.
Hey, thank you, Justin, for joining us. You know, it was a lot of fun hearing your story, and we all love your writing here, so thank you, and have fun watching that Islanders game tonight.
Yeah, thanks a ton for having me on, guys. Talk to you again.
That is Justin Bourne from The Score, one of the hockey bloggers for their website, Backhand Shelf Blog. You know, really interesting guy. I've always loved reading Justin's stuff. I think he's one of the funnier guys on Twitter, and I appreciate the type of perspective he has, especially when so rarely you can see former players in any sport have an opinion about the game that's articulated and, you know, well thought out, unless there's some old geezer who's doing the color for the play-by-play games. But Justin came on, he had a lot of great stuff, and we appreciate him having him on. Chris, we got 4 minutes left. Any thoughts from you? What are you thinking about?
I'm excited because my Montreal Canadiens passed on, which I was actually getting a little nervous. I thought that they lost yesterday, it was over. And that game yesterday, I mean, thank you, Carey Price. So now we're moving on. You know, we got Detroit versus Tampa, and it looks like Detroit may take this. But in a way, you know, as a Habs fan, I do want Detroit to win, but I also want Tampa to win so I can drive up to Tampa and see a couple Habs versus Tampa playoff games. So I hope Tampa wins. But
good point.
Yeah,
good point.
Yeah. So it's a struggle right now.
You should get on our website, the Hockey Guys website owner, James Stefan. You should ask him to see if you could get credentials for Tampa, Montreal. That'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something about Tampa, though. They're getting very popular in Tampa. That area, you know, it's not like down here in Florida, South Florida, where it's you can get media credentials like that. It is getting very tough in Tampa to actually get tickets and credentials. It's turning into Hockey Town, and if you watch the games, I mean, every game is sold out, even in the regular season. It's called a winning team, and maybe the Florida Panthers can get that, and they can actually get a little bit of love around the NHL.
Yeah, Tampa and the California team seem to be the model for the non-traditional hockey markets, the warmer climates. I guess that's what they want the Panthers and the Coyotes to be. Hockey in California is awesome. It really is. Too bad, though. No one's in it anymore. Except the Ducks. We've got the Flames coming up in a few days, but right now, tonight, I'm going to go with Tampa because I can't see Detroit winning this series. I mean, come on. There's no way they're winning this. There's no way Tampa doesn't tie it today. It has to. Has to go to Game 7. And for the other game, I got to go with Washington. They were my Stanley Cup pick at the beginning of the postseason, and I know. The Islanders, when they're hot, no one can stop them. But I believe in Ovi. This is the year of the Ovi. It's the year of the Trots. It's going to go in their favor. Got Caps and Lightning for me tonight. What about you, Chris? What are you thinking?
You know, I think I'll go with Lightning as well. I think that team's too good to miss out on this. But they're a very bad road team, so we'll see. It's going to be a good game there. So I had Washington going far in my bracket, but I think I want to go with the Islanders here. I want to see a New York Rangers versus New York Islanders series, but it's going to be one hell of a game, and Game 7s are the best, and I think we should all be very excited for this one.
We most definitely should. A New York playoff series would be great. Like, those two teams were tremendous this year, and I think the NHL really benefited from the Islanders having their last season at Nassau and them being really good this year, as well as, the Rangers.
Why are they leaving?
Because money. Because there's a lot more money in hipsters in Brooklyn than there is in middle-aged white people in Long Island. But
The Brooklyn Nets didn't sell out their playoff game. I'm just saying that. It's kind of sad.
I think Masai Ujiri summed up the city of Brooklyn as best as they could. Anyway.
Paul Pierce.
Oh, my God, don't talk to me about that. Raptors getting swept. What a joke. It's Toronto sports, man. Leafs, Raptors, and the Jays are okay. I like Josh Donaldson. I like Jose Bautista. Bravo. Anyway, this has been the Hockey Guys Podcast. Thanks to Justin Bourne for coming on the show. You can follow Justin on Twitter at JT Bourne. Follow me on Twitter at Hunter Crowther. Follow Chris at ChrisShannon16. Go to thehockeyguys.net. We should have a new show on Thursday. And, man, these playoffs have been great. I'm loving it. I'm sure you are all too. Take care, folks.